Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So, how can you separate fact from fiction when you scroll through news and social media? Who's behind the disinformation campaigns out there and why? So my next guest has spent the last year looking into all of that for the BBC viewers and listeners. Mariana Spring, you are very welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is your job title?
So my official job title is Specialist Reporter Investigating Disinformation and Social Media, but more often than not it's abbreviated to Specialist Disinformation Reporter because that's a tiny bit easier to fit on the screen or in a queue.
And when did you start this role?
Almost exactly a year ago.
What a year to start. What a year to start. Wow. And was it your own idea that you pitched to the BBC, or was it presented to you as a opportunity?
So I'd covered social media, what was going on in Facebook groups and all of that kind of stuff during the 2019 UK general election. Mm. And out of that came this idea or this appetite for someone to do that all the time, to investigate disinformation, conspiracy theories, what's happening on social media, and more importantly, the impact that it has in the real world on communities across the UK, across the globe, how it affects human beings' lives. And so initially the idea was, oh, brilliant, I'll start this new job and I will be reporting on the US election. And that was how it began a year ago. Only little were we all to know, about 2 weeks later, the internet was overwhelmed with disinformation, messages, WhatsApps about tanks on the streets and ways of curing yourself of COVID that were being spread absolutely everywhere across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And so the disinformation storm was very much upon us about the pandemic. And I've spent the past year focusing a lot on reporting on the impact that that has had, as well as the US election and other big events that have happened.
After a year of doing it, I mean, how do you feel about taking on the challenge? Is it overwhelming?
I think that as time has gone on, particularly since a lot of my reporting has ended up focusing on the impact of conspiracy theories and slightly more sinister disinformation networks than was the case this time last year when those WhatsApps were often quite innocent. I think at times it is a lot. It's a massively big beat to report on and investigate. And I'm lucky to work with a brilliant team of fact checkers and disinformation experts at the BBC. But if anything, you know, it's compelled me to do more, to report on this more. And one thing I especially love is investigating the impacts that disinformation online or conspiracies has on real people's lives. And the real joy of this job has been speaking to those people and investigating their stories. I recently investigated the anti-vaccine movement for BBC Panorama and the impact it was having in the UK. And that investigation was inspired by a lovely woman called Rosemary, who's in her 80s, getting in touch with me about a video that had scared her off the jab. And there was nothing more touching than the WhatsApp message she sent me when the programme had aired, saying, "I'm so happy we could talk to you. I'm so happy we could tell our story. I'm sitting in my house happily vaccinated now. And I hope that by speaking out, I've kind of made all the difference." And it's telling those people's stories that is absolutely the highlight of my job.
What have you learned in the year?
I think the most important thing I've learned is that I think broadly that disinformation and conspiracy theories are not some niche, bizarre internet phenomena. And it's very easy for people to dismiss them as wacky and weird and kind of inconsequential, when actually they have a huge impact on people's lives, destroying personal relationships, destroying people's lives themselves. There are deaths that have been linked to online disinformation, inspiring violence. And for that reason, I think it's such an important beat to report on. But I think it's incredibly important to report with empathy and to try and understand how this disinformation ecosystem works online and how it affects people. And I think by humanizing the impact that it has, by speaking to real people, both those who've been sucked into these conspiracy theories and those who've been affected by falsehood shared online, we can better understand how this works, rather than just contributing to that polarization or dehumanization that often happens on social media, where we don't see people as real human beings. They're just a profile on Facebook or on Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, as a young person, do you find that your generation are drawn in more by disinformation than older groups, or does it affect all generations?
I think you're right in that it does affect all generations, but often in slightly different ways. And we often think of older people being affected by falsehoods shared online because they might be less used to using social media and more likely to fall victim to the tactics that are used. But actually, I often find that because younger people are hyper exposed to this stuff, they're seeing it all the time on Instagram, on TikTok, on their Facebook page, on their phone constantly. And because they also don't tend to turn to more traditional news outlets for information, they can be equally as susceptible, particularly when it comes to conspiracy theories. And I think that none of us should think that we're immune to a lot of these tactics. I remember about this time last year, just before the pandemic started, there was this viral post and it was about a capybara saving loads of animals during the wildfires in Australia. And it was really cute. He was a really sort of giant capybara thing, or maybe it was a wombat. I can't remember what animal it was, but it was very cute. And I shared it with all of my group chats. I thought, oh, this is a great story. Little did I know that it absolutely wasn't true. It was actually being used as a way of criticizing the government in Australia and, you know, critiquing the way they were handling the wildfires. But it's really easy to fall victim to this stuff, particularly because it's often really emotive. So during the pandemic, you know, I can totally understand how people do get sucked in, particularly because the tactics used by a committed minority of bad actors are increasingly sophisticated, and they're good at playing on our fears and exploiting the concerns and questions we might have.
What's their motivation then?
There are a variety of motivations for spreading disinformation. Often it's influence, often it's power, sometimes it's making money. I think in a culture of influencers where having big social media followings is a valuable thing, that certainly has contributed to inspiring people to deliberately spread falsehoods and to be deliberately polarizing online in a bid to do that. But I think it's always worth pointing out that it's a small minority of people who are very, very committed and who want to spread bad information for ulterior motives. They then often suck in a broader group of people who fall victim to this stuff for very complex reasons. It really struck me recently, I was reporting on an anti-lockdown protest where a lot of people were promoting falsehoods about the vaccine, suggesting that Bill Gates was going to kill everyone and microchip them, or that the vaccine would change your DNA. And I was talking to a man and I was questioning when he said to me, this is all part of a mass genocide. This is all a big plot. And I was asking how and why and how would it be coordinated all across the world? And why would someone want to do this? And he looked me dead in the eye and just said, you seem to think that most people are good, and I think that almost all people are bad. And I think that speaks a lot to how people fall victim to this stuff, because they are distrustful, often for very legitimate reasons of authority, or they feel betrayed. And that leaves them very vulnerable to this stuff, especially when they're seeing it on social media all the time.
What would you say to someone who might say your work on what you do is clamping down on healthy political discussion?
I'd always say that there's a very big difference between extreme conspiracy theories. So the suggestion that, for instance, the vaccine contains a microchip, or that it's going to be used to deliberately kill people, or that it changes your DNA. And then legitimate questions and debates that we can have, whether that's about the way the pandemic has been handled, political criticisms, questions and concerns people might have about the vaccine. Those two things are worlds apart. And my job is reporting on the former. But what often happens is the former interacts with the latter. So often these conspiracy theories do exploit legitimate concerns or debate or questions. And that's where the line can be blurred a bit. But it's really important that we investigate and understand how that happens without making people feel like they can't obviously have legitimate debates and questions about the way the government's handled the pandemic, or more broadly.
Yeah, because there are, there's legitimate concerns about everything. I mean, it's only natural for people to question what's going on. But would you say the line of work that you do sometimes might silence people because they don't want to be seen as a conspiracist and having these madcap ideas, but still have legitimate concerns about various things that's going on in the world?
I think that, again, you know, if you have legitimate questions and concerns, then absolutely, you know, that's really important. And you should be able to have those conversations. My job is investigating disinformation and conspiracy theories that are linked to direct harm in the world, that have caused harm, whether that's putting a vulnerable person off the vaccine with false information so they can't make an informed decision about whether they want to have it, to, you know, a man who I interviewed in the US whose wife really sadly ended up dying because he and her had both believed that the pandemic was caused by 5G, or that it wasn't real, or that it was a hoax. They didn't follow health guidance. They both fell very ill. They didn't seek help when they fell ill, and there were disastrous consequences. So I think when you've come face to face with people who, or sometimes virtually, sometimes in real life, who've experienced the real world consequences of this stuff, you really start to understand the difference between that and then having legitimate questions and concerns. And I work with brilliant teams at the BBC, whether that's the health team or the politics team or Reality Check, who do great fact checking and scrutinizing policy and all of that kind of stuff. It doesn't really fall in my remit, but my remit is understanding when what's being shared online spills over into real world harm and has real life consequences.
So what advice would you have for people and how they can navigate the online world of these theories that are coming in, legitimate or not, and how to differentiate? Do you have any advice for anybody listening right now?
I think that the best thing to do is to think, if you do have legitimate concerns and questions and you want them answered, absolutely go and investigate. I think that it's really important that people weaponize in some ways what allows disinformation to spread. And people often say to me, I do my own research, I look into stuff, and that's really good. Well, do your own research and do it rigorously. You know, speak to health professionals you trust. I think one thing I often say when it comes to the vaccines is, you know, the overwhelming body of scientific evidence tells you that the vaccine is safe, that it's effective, and there are all kinds of trusted doctors, medics in your life that you can speak to. When I was reporting for Panorama, I interviewed lots of doctors who'd spoken to their communities and answered their specific questions. It's totally normal to have questions and concerns, and absolutely you should be able to voice them, but make sure that you're not being conned, that you're not being exploited by people who are deliberately spreading falsehoods for some other gain to try and frighten you, because that's absolutely not what you want to happen. You want to be getting good information that allows you to make informed decisions about your own health and your own circumstances.
It just seems all over the world, as we've seen with riots and protests, things are getting out of hand, and a lot of conspiracy theorists are absolutely think they're right. And would you say a better approach in dealing with these types of people would be for government officials or leaders to address what they're saying and answer these questions? I mean, surely with communicating and discussion, we can all learn something.
Yeah, I think I'm a big advocate of always reporting with empathy and trying to understand why people believe what they believe. Often, like I said, people have a legitimate concern or a question, and they've ended up falling victim to bad information online or conspiracy theories to answer that, because they're not getting those answers elsewhere, or because they've had themselves bad experiences. I think one issue is that often people, for legitimate reasons, are distrustful of government. Mm. And if government turn around and say something, they're not necessarily going to believe it. So I often find in my reporting that people are more likely to trust those around them, whether it's friends or family or their doctor that they always see, or someone else in their life who they've had good experiences with, who they trust. And that can be a good place to turn. But I absolutely think that branding people nutty and crazy and bizarre is not helpful, because on one hand, it often can dismiss legitimate concerns that people have and questions. But more broadly, it doesn't really solve the problem. It just entrenches this polarization that we see online and then spills offline. And if you're able to talk to people and to understand what's going on as a reporter, you know, that's the best thing I can do. That's my job, because I want to understand how this happens, how people are affected. And in exposing that, in some ways, it protects people going forwards who are able to understand how this works and often how they're being conned or tricked by bad actors online.
What a job. I mean, what a job you have. And thank you for doing it. It's a phenomenal job. Thank you so much for enlightening us and coming on the show. Mariana Spring, a specialist reporter covering disinformation and social media at the BBC. Thank you so much for taking our call and telling us about your crazy year in a fascinating job. Take care of yourself. And thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, bye, bye. There we go. That is Mariana Spring. What a job she has. Fair play to her. I hope we've all learned something from that. What did you make of that? Let me know your thoughts on that chat. 51552. You can also mail the show jen@rte.ie. We'll be back right after these.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.